Chapter 4. Keep it flowing and smooth. Yes, small talk and all of its incarnations are quite dreadful as a whole. But that doesn't change the fact that we are at least partially responsible for the outcomes we've gotten. What can we do to keep small talk from going stale and heading to a place where none of the people involved want to go? Sometimes it's like watching a slow descent into a black hole. You know where you're going, and it seems like there's nothing you can do about it other than ride it out. So, here are a few more ways to keep small talk anything but small. Create motion. You might not think about it this way, but conversations and interactions must always be moving somewhere. There must always be a sense of motion. When you have motion in a conversation, it's not that you're necessarily injecting it with energy and high spirits. It's that you can't stay on the same topic forever, and the conversation needs to evolve in one way or another, or else interest will be lost. It can go deeper, wider, broader, more specific, or onto another topic altogether. But if you stay stagnant and without motion, then, well, what are you doing? That sounds something like the following. So, yeah, you drove an hour to get here? That's crazy. Traffic is crazy. But everyone has commutes these days. What kind of traffic was there today? That's an interaction with zero motion, and you can sense it. Let's look at this in a theatrical context. Let's suppose that the starting topic for a scene is a visit at the dentist, and it begins in the lobby. Does the scene stay in the lobby? Absolutely not. It moves in at least one of a few ways. The scene might move locations into the office of the dentist itself. The scene might introduce multiple different characters. The scene might change its focus and move away from the dentist altogether. The scene might change from the initial purpose, and the patient is visiting the dentist because he is an assassin, rather than to get his teeth cleaned, and so on. But the lobby is only a part of the story, and the motion dictates that it be only temporary. Contrast any of those situations to a scene that stays exactly in the same lobby, with the same characters, talking about the same thing. It may not be the worst scene, but it would have to be written pretty damn well to be interesting. And we know that's never the case with small talk. To boil this section down to one main sentiment, small talk, and conversation in general, goes much better if you intentionally create motion and seek to end in a different place from where you started. For example, you can't talk about the weather forever. You need to create motion away from it or into it from a different angle. You can plan for your conversations to resemble stories in movies and learn about specific types of motion you can introduce on the fly. When you go to a movie, you're not looking for something that fits your daily life. You're looking for a story about something significant or unusual or extraordinary, a deviation from your everyday experience. If you're going to watch a biographical movie, you wouldn't want to watch the mundane parts of the characters' lives, where they use the bathroom or brush their teeth. Instead, you want to see the unique, interesting, and exaggerated moments. You want to see conflict, problem-solving, then resolution. These are all accomplished by creating motion in normal conversation topics and not just staying in one place. A conversation that stays in one place will eventually become boring filler, since topics can easily be exhausted without motion. As I mentioned before, there are only so many comments or questions you can make about the weather. So, how do you create motion in a topic such as the weather? Types of motion. Shift to a topic related to the weather. Go deeper into the topic of weather beyond shallow and surface-level comments. Share a personal experience with weather. Ask what their favorite types of weather are. Talk about the emotions the weather evokes in you. Discuss your nuanced opinion on the weather. Ask outlandish hypothetical questions about the weather. Reference third parties, papers, articles, statements from friends regarding the weather. Notice that these are similar ways of creating motion as the methods of manipulating the scene at the dentist's lobby from earlier. They force the interaction to go somewhere and don't allow it to remain on comments about the weather or to stay in the dentist's lobby. Stagnation is one of the sneakier causes of poor interactions because it's something we all default to eventually. It's the lazy person's way of conversing, relying on the other person to shoulder the burden of topics and details. The rule of creating motion battles stagnation as it forces you to move away from lazy routines. Before one topic is completely bled dry, you can jump to other ones to keep engagement high and prevent dead ends and boredom. Joseph Campbell was an Ivy League academic who studied the major myths of all the world's major spiritual traditions. And according to Campbell, the great myths and stories share certain elements in common. Regardless of whom the stories are told to, they are always effective because they hit on certain classic themes that are contained in the hero cycle. The hero of the story starts at point A, and a situation arises that compels the hero to travel to point B. On the way back from point B to point A, certain conflicts and resolutions occur, and the hero is forever transformed and enlightened. According to Campbell, people respond to the hero cycle because we can relate to the stages. We have all struggled, conquered, and grown through fear, adversity, and obstacles. The hero cycle goes a long way in explaining how people from all over the world, from all sorts of cultures, class levels, and educational backgrounds, deal with the same phenomena in much the same way. Great conversations are journeys. They never remain in the same place. There's a sense of direction. There's a sense of conflict that needs resolution, and there's a sense of tension that needs to be unwound. You don't end up in one preset place, but you do achieve closure. There's a payoff, and that's what creating motion does. Let's take another example where the topic is suddenly steak. Types of motion. What made you bring up steak, and why is it on your mind? What memories you have with steak. How your view of steak has changed over the years. A random fact or a piece of trivia you know about steak. Your emotions regarding steak. Ask for their emotions regarding steak. It seems obvious that an interaction infused with motion must be heading somewhere, but many people will fall prey to one major trap. In the quest for motion, there's the danger of planning ahead with fixed ideas and destinations in mind. This is dangerous for a few reasons. First, imagine the concept of a performance with three participants, and all three already have fixed ideas of where they want the scene to go. In essence, they will be influencing each other and trying to herd the other two into the directions they want. It won't be pretty, unless you like hearing three monologues simultaneously. Second, you run the risk of spectacular failure when you're derailed from the path of your fixed destination. This is because you're so fixated on where you want to go that you haven't kept an open mind to other subjects or topics, and won't be able to adapt very well. If you've been thinking the whole time about how to turn the conversation or performance to the subject of cars, you will probably come up tongue-tied when the subject instead turns to different types of hats. If you're open to the destination, you can roll with the punches, so to speak, because your mental bandwidth isn't otherwise consumed. Third, having a fixed destination in mind for your conversation makes you too goal-oriented. And by definition, this means you are willfully ignoring everything else that happens in front of you. You might even be dismissing your conversation partner and their opinions because they aren't providing what you are looking for. Suppose that you want to arrive at the same topic of cars, and other subjects keep getting in the way. Being overly goal-oriented would lead you to continually bring up cars, even though it would be a completely random shift in topic, and unwelcome since it was steered away from multiple times. It makes you appear tone-deaf, and people will begin to wonder if you've even heard them speak. This tendency also generally makes you a fairly unengaging conversationalist. Instead, Simply understand when you are being stagnant and lingering on the same topic and the same angle for too long. Think on your feet. Now, we know we need to create motion, and yet still, there are times when we are just stuck. Our minds go blank. When we try to think of different things to talk about, our dilemma becomes even worse, like trying to climb out of quicksand. The struggle just makes it tougher. Before you know it, anxiety and pressure start to build, and you're beginning to sweat on your upper lip. So, let's simplify conversation. Conversation is a series of statements, stories, and questions. After one person contributes one of those elements, the other person responds in kind, either on the same exact topic or a topic that is in some way related to the original one. That's really it. Sometimes we'll have trouble thinking of what to say on the same topic or finding a connection to another subject. That's where free association comes in. Isn't conversation just a series of free association exercises? For instance, if someone started talking about motorcycles and you had no experience or impression of motorcycles, then what is your response going to be? You might not have anything to say about motorcycles, but what if you took away the statement and context and focused on the word and concept of motorcycles? With simple free association, you can find a way to quickly and efficiently breathe new life into the conversation, regardless of how deeply stuck it may feel. Just free associate 5 things about motorcycles. In other words, blurt out 5 things, nouns, locations, concepts, statements, feelings, words, that flashed into your brain when you heard the word motorcycles. Allow your mind to go blank and zero in on the word motorcycles. Stop thinking of the word as a trigger to past experiences and memory. Instead, start looking at it as a fresh concept unconnected to what you've experienced before. Play a word association game with yourself. What does motorcycles make you think of? We're just talking about purely intellectual connections. It doesn't matter what you feel, what your emotions are. It doesn't matter what your experiences were, whether you were traumatized or not. It has nothing to do with that. This is just a purely intellectual challenge to try to rapidly fill out a list of what motorcycles as a concept can connect to. Let's switch words. For most people, when the word cats is mentioned, they think of kittens, cuddles, sandboxes, cheetahs, lions, fish, sushi, fur, dogs, allergies, the musical, etc. Keep in mind that there is no right or wrong answer here. It's all free association. What's important is that you're rapidly filling out that list of things that you can intellectually connect with the word cats. You'll notice that doing this is much easier than coming up with a responsive statement or question to the declaration, "I love cats." Yet, your task and challenge is exactly the same. Where do you go with what the other person said? With that framework and perspective, it's much easier to disassociate from the actual statement and free associate with the subject matter. Doing this will train your brain to think outside the box, approach conversation in a non-linear way, and see the many possible directions one simple concept or word can take you. Now, suppose that someone proclaimed their love for car racing, and suppose that you know nothing about that either. What are the top 5 or 6 free associations that come to mind for car racing? For me, it's a mixture of 1, NASCAR, 2, gas, 3, tires, 4, the Fast and the Furious movies, 5, Japan, don't ask me, 6, Mustangs. Here's the magic part. Each of these 6 associations are perfectly normal topics to switch to while remaining in the flow of the conversation. I love watching car racing. It's so fun. You mean like NASCAR or illegal street racing? I always wondered what kind of gas mileage those cars get. Do those cars have specialized tires? I don't think my car's tires could take that. So, are the Fast and the Furious movies your favorites? I heard they do some kind of drift racing in Japan. Do you mean like that? I always imagine car racing happens with huge, powerful Mustangs. Is that the kind of car races you watch? Try free association with the words coffee and trains and think about how much easier it is to construct questions and generally converse about something once you can form a mental map of the topic and its related topics. You just feel unstuck. Of course, the best way to do this is not to try it for the first time when you're in an actual conversation. Practice free association consciously several times throughout the course of a week. The more you do it, the better you get at it. Here's how to practice. On a piece of paper, write 5 random words. They can be anything, a noun, verb, memory, or even an emotion or feeling. Suppose the first word you write is napkin. As quickly as possible, write 3 associations for that word. Take the last word you came up with, and then, as quickly as possible, write 3 associations for that new word. Repeat 3 times, and then move to the next set of words. Napkin. Table, spoon, fine dining. Fine dining? France. Michelin star. Butler. Butler. Jeeves. White gloves. Michael Jackson. And so on. Or pick a word at random from a dictionary and list out 15 words in a free association word chain as quickly as possible. Then do it again and again, verbally, because that will require the quickest thinking. After you grow more comfortable with random free association with words, you can take the next step and choose 2 random words from a dictionary and pretend they're in the name of a company. Then create a short story about what that company does as quickly as possible. For example, the 2 random words you pick are bottle, Africa. The short story I would construct about a company named Africa Bottle is that they import African homemade liquors. The final step of this set of free association exercises is to choose 5 random words from the dictionary and make up a story that involves all of the words as quickly as possible. Again, these exercises are intended to train you to think quickly and be creative, so it's imperative that you do these exercises at full speed. They'll be tough, and at first your responses might seem terrible, but imagine how big the difference will be between your first day and your 10th day, for example. That's the power of free association and practice. If you also care to analyze the similarities between free association and conversation, you might find that they are virtually the same. In conversation, you'll reply to someone on a topic, a slightly related topic or a new topic. That's exactly the type of thought process that free association takes. In a sense, free association trains you to come up with conversation topics quickly. Practicing free association is an excellent foundation for good conversation because conversation is about relating unrelated things, making connections, and going with the flow of topics. Next time you're struggling with something to say, take a step back and tap into your previously practiced free association skills. Just as with every other aspect of conversation skills, you can only master it if you try it enough times. The best part of all this is that you can do it instantly. You get caught in a stream of consciousness flow. Always remember, there's no right or wrong answer. If you believe there is, you'll be putting unnecessary pressure on yourself. Helpful acronyms: HPM, SBR, and EDR. What are these strange acronyms? Put simply, they are 9 distinct types of responses you can use for practically any topic that arises in a conversation. They are all quite helpful because if you are stumped or you can see an awkward silence creeping around the corner, you can essentially use them as ice-breaking cue cards to find topics to talk about and ways to respond to people. It also makes sense to refer to them as a plug and playable, because all you need to do is plug in one of these responses and Bingo. It just works. The right responses can go a long way to jumpstart and add new life to your conversations. It doesn't matter how good a conversationalist you are, because awkward silences are always lurking around the corner. Using these acronyms, you can always find a way to work around these impending conversation killers. HPM. HPM stands for History, Philosophy, and Metaphor. This means, in response to a question or statement directed at you, you reply with your own statement that evokes history, philosophy, or a metaphor. HPM tends to draw on your memories, experiences, and opinions, which is a bit different from the other acronyms you'll be learning about in this chapter. It's more internal and personal, while others are more external and in the moment. History means you reply with your personal experience regarding a topic. For example, if someone tells you a story about skiing, this is a prompt for you to reply with, "That reminds me of the last time I skied. That's just like the first time I skied as a child. What a coincidence. My mother's friend went skiing last week and had a blast." Philosophy, on the other hand, involves your personal stance, take, or opinion on a specific topic. For example, if someone tells you that same rousing story about skiing, you can reply with, "I've always loved skiing because I've hated skiing ever since. Skiing is so much fun, my favorite hobby. I don't know how I feel about skiing. On one hand..." Metaphor, on the other hand, involves what the conversation topic reminds you of. If you're hearing the same story about skiing for the third time in the same day, you might not want to talk about it again. Thus, this is a prompt for you to subtly change the topic to something that's related, or not so related. This works as long as you can preface it with some sort of transition. "That reminds me of..." "That's just the opposite of snowboarding, isn't it? That makes me think of..." "Isn't that similar to..." Keep in mind that HPM is more focused on you, what you think, and what your experiences are. It really has nothing to do with the other person, but with what the topic at hand evokes from you. A memory, an opinion or feeling, or a jumping-off point from which to change the subject. Seems pretty easy and intuitive, right? The point is that everyone has these things. Everyone has personal stories and experiences, and everyone has opinions and stances on subjects, and everyone can envision how one topic is related to or reminiscent of another. It's just that we're lazy conversationalists who don't realize the broad scope of what's available for us to talk about. SBR, on the other hand, is similar but probably easier to use quickly on your feet than HPM. It's external, which means everything that you need to continue any conversational topic is right there in front of you. SBR. SBR stands for specific, broad, and related. To any statement or question directed to you, you can reply with one of these types of statements. Specific involves asking targeted questions regarding the topic you're talking about. This kind of response allows you to drag the conversation forward or take it deeper by pulling out fine details. Suppose you want to get into the nitty-gritty of what's being discussed. Let's take the skiing story example we used earlier. "What kind of slopes did you go down? How was the snow? How many times have you skied recently?" Broad means you ask broad questions about the topic. These create context and are great springboards to subtopics. This enables the conversation to proceed smoothly from the main topic to a subtopic and all the way to a completely new topic. Get the background and the general lay of the land here. "Where was this? Who did you go with? When was this? How did you drive there?" Finally, related refers to asking about something that is either directly or broadly related to the subject of your conversation. The great thing about related is that it allows you to explore issues tangential to the overall topic. I love when it's snowing outside. I love taking weekend trips. Isn't it great getting physically active as much as possible? The unifying characteristic of the SBR conversation strategy is that it focuses primarily on the topics you're talking about. That is, you're taking the exact topic that's in front of you, digging deeper into it, and essentially letting the other person guide you through questions. So, that was a fairly direct and straightforward set of rules, right? Now you have 6 responses you can pop into just about any situation, almost as if you're reading off cue cards and can just say, philosophy. Well, the way I feel about that is... On to the last, EDR. With these final 3 of the 9 frameworks, you've added a whole lot of engagement, personalization, depth, and intrigue to a conversation that might otherwise have begun and ended at, hey, how's your weekend? EDR. EDR is the last part of the 9 frameworks that you can also employ to answer just about anything. It straddles HPM and SBR. You can use what's in front of you, but it's even better if you draw internally and speak about your own thoughts and opinions. EDR stands for Emotion, Detail, and Restatements. E, emotion, means when you respond to a statement made in conversation, you state someone else's emotion or emotional state. You mention what you believe your conversational partner's emotional response to be. For example, it seems like you're really excited about that. If it's not 100% apparent and clear to you what the other person's emotional state is, you can make a statement summing up an assumption to see whether you're right or not. You don't have to be correct. The point is that whether you are or not, they will correct you and automatically explain their actual feelings. I went skiing last weekend. You sound really excited about that. If you were wrong, actually I'm not. Here's why. If you were right, totally. It's very thrilling to be on the slopes. Think of this like being a very open-minded counselor who just wants to talk about other people's feelings. When you state someone's emotions, you appear to be very in tune with them and engaged in their well-being. What makes this approach particularly effective is that you talk about other people's emotions, not yours. As we've established, people like to be the center of attention. The more attention you give them, the more they're likely to talk. With E, you allow them to take the limelight and express their emotions. People appreciate this because most people like to feel they matter, and they aren't often given a chance to feel that way. D, detail, means when you respond to a topic, you do so by asking for details and how they relate to the person with whom you're speaking. This is similar to the S in SBR. You get the details, and you also get an overview of how they impact the person you're speaking to. For example, the key journalistic 5 W's, who, what, where, when, and why, work perfectly here. The 5 W's work so well because they allow you to tie in different details to the person with whom you're speaking. Think of yourself as a detective sifting through different clues to solve a mystery. For example, when did you start doing that? How did that make you feel? And so on. R, restatements, means restating or summarizing what the other person said and then throw it back at them. This is very effective because it lets the person you're speaking with know loud and clear that you're paying attention to them. You're paying so much attention that you can't get their words out of your mouth. As I mentioned above, people like to feel they matter. What better way to show that appreciation than simply letting them know in clear terms that you were listening to what they had to say and, moreover, you want to make sure you understand what they've said? When you restate what they say, you are essentially validating them twice. First, the simple act of summarizing what they said already validates them. It lets them know that you were listening to them. On top of that, you ask for their permission or confirmation to see if you've understood them correctly. This creates a tremendous sense of comfort and validation for the other person. I went skiing in the mountains last weekend. So you went skiing in the mountains last weekend? So you went skiing in the mountains last weekend? So you went skiing in the mountains last weekend? This prompts them to elaborate on their statement without your having to say much. All you did was say the exact same thing back to them with a slight emphasis on a different word to indicate that you're curious and want clarification on an aspect of what they've said. Each of these three versions is a distinctly different assertion or question, but you are using their exact words. Think of this like a psychologist prompting a patient for deeper and more personal discoveries and insights. By using EDR in addition to HPM and SBR, you now have 9 ways to respond to people about anything. Which of the 9 feel easy and natural to you, and which feel difficult? Pay careful attention, because, as previously noted, some of these are more about your own thoughts and internal workings, and others are about the situation in front of you and the other person. So, if you skew too much in one direction, it can mean you're either a conversational narcissist or someone who provides no value or substance. Chain them together, and with these 9 techniques, you'll pretty much never run out of things to talk about. Takeaways. How can you keep conversation, small talk especially, flowing smoothly when you don't feel like you have anything to talk about? This is a challenge even with good friends sometimes. Most of the time, this feeling of stagnancy occurs because you're doing exactly that, stagnating, and nothing is being added or extracted from the interaction on either side. But there are several ways you can change that. First, create a sense of motion. Staying on the same topic, sentiment, or feeling for too long will create a feeling of boredom and even mild stress. Why can't you escape it? Indeed, if you watch a movie and it's just people talking the entire time, the movie better be damn well written to be interesting. To contrast, Joseph Campbell's Hero's Journey is a classic story that follows someone's quest, success, and subsequent transformation. Luckily, there are a multitude of ways to create motion in an interaction, but the most powerful part is simply realizing that things must move in some way. Sometimes, despite knowing full well that we must create motion, we are unable to do it. Sometimes our minds go blank. The next couple of sections deal with this specifically. How can you think more quickly on your feet? This requires practice. No one who manages it consistently is truly born with such a quick wit. And so how do you practice it? With free association, by simply taking a word and naming a few words or concepts that it reminds you of. The important part is to train your brain's quick response reflex and break through any mental filters you might possess. You can also choose 2 words and relate them with a brief story, or flip to random words in the dictionary and use them to create a story. Finally, in case all else escapes your mind, there are 3 incredibly helpful acronyms that can assist you in never running out of things to say on the fly. These are HPM, SBR, and EDR. HPM stands for history, your personal experience with the topic, philosophy, your opinion on the topic, and metaphor, what the topic makes you think of. SBR stands for specific, more detail on the topic, broad, broader context of topic, and related, related topics. EDR stands for emotion, the emotions the topic evokes in the other person. Detail, more detail on the topic, and restatements, restating the topic to prompt greater elaboration.